The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
The Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter /X @Bastards_Boston. The Boston Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Cincinnati Reds, outscoring their opponents 13-12, taking two games out of the three. We are currently now 42-36, six games above 500 in third place, nine games back behind the Bombers, and are currently the third wild card team at the moment with just a half game lead above the Kansas City Royals that have been as cold as ice. The Red Sox now 8-2 over their last 10. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter @Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jim Delfino, guest spot today, coming to us from Shelton, Connecticut, and Terry Cushman, coming to us all the way from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Jim, how are you doing? It's been a little bit. How are things going?
Really good, Charlie. Nice to hear from you and Terry again.
Welcome back. It's been a pleasure to see your friendly face once more. Terrence, how are things going down south?
It's cooking down here. I mean, every day's in the 90s. It's a sauna as soon as I open the door. The door to my house, like the humidity makes either the door or my frame like swell. So you got to like fight to get it open. but that's life in the South, and pretty good weekend for the Sox on the road in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's hot as heck in Rhode Island. I got my classic favorite t-shirt on, as I'm sure you can kind of tell. What is your temperature check right now on the Boston Red Sox, Jim? Currently, you know, we're 8-2 over our last 10, six games above 500. What are you thinking? How are you feeling?
Well, I mean, look, you got to look at the numbers and you got to see what the, you know, what the wins and losses are over the last 10 games. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball. You know, to my surprise, I was really quite taken back that they were able to take two out of three from, you know, the Phillies and two out of three from the Yankees. I didn't expect either one of those, you know, and then to go and sweep Toronto and then come here, win two out of three against the Reds, which you should do when you're facing a last place team. I mean, they're in a great position right now. Of course, the thing I always think about is when's this going to turn, because it always seems to happen. The last couple of Junes, I think we've done pretty well. And, you know, then, of course, we get closer to the trading deadline and then things start falling apart. So I'm pleased with the way they're playing right now. Let's just see if it's sustainable. That's my biggest question.
Fair enough. Terry, how are you feeling?
You know, I mean, it's crazy how it's all going down. I mean, your starting pitching outside of Tanner Houck has not been stellar. It's been very vulnerable, and nonetheless, we're putting up W's almost every time out. You know, you've had some, you know, breakouts, if you want to call it that, from some of our young prospects. David Hamilton has been a revelation. I mean, the expectations on him haven't been super high. And the crazy thing is neither Rafaela or even Hamilton really had a great series. And yet we take two out of three. So I don't know what's happening. It's kind of like I'm starting to get 2021 vibes. You know, the path throughout the season it won't be the same, but I just remember that October. I mean, Tampa was one of the best teams in baseball. We beat them 3-1 in the ALDS, and we're all looking at each other like, what is happening right now? And that's what's going on. So I'm still kind of pessimistic about the pitching, but the trade deadline is getting closer and closer, and it's going to be fascinating to see what the front office mindset is here and how they handle it.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned one of the names. No look right now. David Hamilton, where is he in the majors in stolen bases? Jaren Duran, where do you think he lies with hits in Major League Baseball? Do either one of you guys know?
I do know.
Okay. It's insane because David Hamilton, first game of the season, no one thought would be a relevant name for the Boston Red Sox. And he's absolutely torching everybody. He's got 12 stolen bases in the month of June alone. We're not even done yet. He's hitting .288, a couple homers, 7 RBIs. No triples without that blazing speed. But, I mean, an almost .300 batting average from someone who no one, gun to their head, could have said, oh, yeah, you can totally expect this kind of production from him. He's absolutely carrying this team in one capacity. And if he can continue to do this, 50 stolen bases is not going to be too hard for him.
I don't think so. And, you know, he could lead the majors, you know, if he has the opportunity and continues. I don't think he's going to continue this exact pace, but if he continues to kind of force his way into the lineup, you know, by
it's
being
happening already.
Yeah. So,
you know,
he absolutely could.
Absolutely. Terry, why don't you lead us off as we had studs going first as we won the series? Why don't you lead us off with your stud for this series?
I have to go with my favorite player. That would be Jaren Duran. I haven't looked it up, but now that Mookie is out for at least another, 4 to 6 weeks, Duran has to be the best leadoff guy in all of Major League Baseball without looking at it. I mean, I can't think of who could be better, but he was 8-for-13 on the series. Hit a home run in the first game off of Andrew Abbott out to right field. Was 2-for-4 in game one, 2-for-4 in game two, and then was all over the place today in the finale, top of the fourth. He nearly missed another home run. It went off the center field wall in straightaway center. Had it been another 3 feet higher, it would have went over the fence. But drove in Rafaela on that one. And then in the top of the sixth, had a RBI single to right. That brought in David Hamilton. So helping us win tons of different ways. Just an epic series. Let's see where his average is at this point. .288 on the season, .835 OPS. That's 115 points above league average. So the dude is killing it. And I want to point out two things here. Now, number one, for much of April and May, I was saying we should sell high on Jaren Duran. His stock is never going to be higher. And he will net you your biggest haul. But at this point, I'm at the point where you're not going to get equal value back at this point. He is a bona fide. He's going to be on the All-Star team. It's just a matter of whether he's going to be starting the game or not. And I just think he's just going to be one of those out-of-nowhere guys. Mookie Betts, I would call an out-of-nowhere guy. He never really had any hype until about AA. And I don't think he's going to quite reach the heights Mookie has, obviously, but I think he could be a perennial All-Star for the next 4, 5, 6 years and one of the better leadoff guys. And whether we keep him or not, that remains to be seen because we've got a lot of studs coming up and we're as I've been screaming from the mountaintops all year long, you know, we've got nothing but lefties. Heim Bloom had a lefty fetish, and, you know, we'll get into one of our better right-handers in a little bit. But last thing I want to point out before I kick it over to you guys, I think he's going to be in the top 10 for MVP at this point. I think that's where he's going to land. It's just a question of how high can he go. I don't have the tweet up in front of me, but he's something like first in triples, obviously. He is third in Major League Baseball in doubles. He's fifth or sixth in hits, fifth or sixth in stolen bases. And we're starting to see him hit for power. The home runs are ticking up. I think he's going to hit at least 20 by the end of the year. He's going to be probably a 20, 90, 2100 guy. And I would have just been happy if he matched last year's production. That would have been amazing. But he's just blowing it all away right now. So those are my thoughts on Duran.
I love it. Jim, anything else you want to add?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Duran has really, you know, blossomed into probably one of the top 25, top 30 players in the game, at least for this season, let's call it. I mean, right now he ranks 22 in OPS, you know, in both all of Major League Baseball. He's obviously, you know, a threat to run. I'm a big guy. I love steal. I love speed. I love stolen bases. I'm a big speed guy. I love the craziness that speed can provide, and how it can really mess up the timing and the play of your opponent. It's great, you know. And you know, if he continues to be able to steal at the pace he is, 50 stolen bases is probably, you know, a very achievable number. As far as the 20 home runs, you know, it's hard to say. It might be a little bit of a stretch, but I think it's possible. But, you know, the one thing that I can say is he's probably been the most consistent offensive player you've had all season. Connor Wong's probably in that discussion too. But, you know, from start until now, he really hasn't had a stretch that he has, you know, really been like struggling. And to his credit, I think, you know, you're talking about a guy 2 years ago that we probably would have traded for a box of rocks, you know, and now you're talking about probably one of the best players on your team. You know, I got a lot of slack online this past week because I said that Duran, you know, there's probably a bunch of maybe 10 or 12 players that could get voted before Duran in the All-Star game because it's a popularity contest, and everybody thought, I thought Duran stunk, and I don't. It's just a matter of it's a popularity contest. Will he make the All-Star team? He should. I don't know if he will, but you got to like what you see. Hopefully he can keep it up and not, you know, get into any kind of slump, and, you know, as we get to the second half.
I love the points that you guys brought up, and I'm looking at Jaren Duran right now, and here are the numbers that we have so far. 78 games played. 323 at-bats. That number I'm not going to really focus on, although I think there's a chance he could crack that too. 53 runs, 93 hits, 22 doubles, 10 triples, 7 homers, 36 RBIs, 30 walks. 3 times he's been hit. He has 80 strikeouts and 20 stolen bases. I think he is going to exceed all of the numbers he had in total between 2021 and 2023. How many home runs did he hit? 13. RBIs, 67. Walks, 42. Strikeouts, I don't think he's going to get that one. Stolen bases, 33. He had 87, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, runs in that time. I think that Jaren Duran is going to exceed all of those numbers altogether. And just out of curiosity, I was looking, have the Red Sox ever had two guys steal 30 bases or more in one season? The answer is yes, and it happened one time. And you have to go back 114 years ago. Harry Hooper had 40. Tris Speaker had 35. So you have to go back 114 years to when the Boston Red Sox were a relevant running team with not one guy, but two guys that were this electric. There is an opportunity here for two guys on the Boston Red Sox to get 40 stolen bases or more. He has been incredibly consistent. And to both of your points, I think is going to end up being one of those guys at the end of the year that you're going to be shaking your head if this guy's not starting at the All-Star game. He's got a WAR of almost 4. I don't have to mention all the stats that Terry had already mentioned before. There's a chance that he can end up having 20 triples. Will he get it? Maybe not. Will he come close? Pretty sure he will if he doesn't get there. But this is going to be a guy that I think will hit between 15 and 20 home runs. I think he's going to get between 70 and 90 RBIs. And I think there's a chance that we could see 40 to 45 stolen bases with a batting average that can touch 300. If you have that right now as your leadoff hitter, that is better than Mookie Betts because you do not have Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Will Smith, Teoscar Hernandez hitting behind you, and you're still putting up dumb numbers. You're scoring a lot of runs. You're knocking in a lot of players that are not even nearly on the same tier as you. So, yeah, if this guy doesn't get it, to your point, I believe, Jim, you mentioned popularity contest. The Red Sox are not the best team in all of baseball, but, man, we're starting to make some noise, and it is exciting to see. Anything else that you got? Yeah, Jim, go ahead.
One other thing, too, Duran also is tied third in doubles. So, I mean, there's a very good shot, and I don't know if you brought that up a couple minutes ago. There's a very good chance he's going to hit 40 doubles, maybe even 50. I mean, depending on how the next couple weeks turn out. But, I mean, you're talking about an electric, amount of stats in every offensive category. And let's not even we haven't even talked about his defense. It's a complete turnaround to where he's been back a couple years ago. I mean, he's legitimately robbing home runs. The only thing I would say, if you want to find a fault with him, his the way he kind of goes after a ball. I mean, he makes up for it with his speed, but he has a little bit of trouble, you know, with the tracking of some of the hits. But other than that, he's been really solid.
He did. I forget which hitter it was, but it was today. I'm pretty sure he robbed one right at the center field wall. And it wasn't the most dramatic catch, but you know, you gotta lock in on it and make the play. And he certainly did that. Question real quick for both of you before we move on. Instead of the fan vote, and I get why the fan vote is popular with MLB. They just want involvement from the fans and maybe it makes the All-Star game bigger. But should the baseball writers instead of the fans be deciding who starts the All-Star game, similar to the, you know, the MVP votes at the end of the year and all that? Would the system have more integrity if they went that route?
Jim, go ahead.
It's a really good question. I think no matter what you do, there's going to be brushback, right? Someone's going to find fault with something. You know, you're relying it on the writers to do so and make that decision versus the fans. I think if you did do it that way, you'd probably get more of the players deserving coming into that game. But then again, you know, the other argument you're going to have is because it's a popularity game, you know, fair weather fans that don't follow the sport too well are going to look at guys like Duran and say, who the hell is this guy? And so that's the one thing that you worry about. And then, of course, if people don't watch the game, you know, or less people watch the game, then you got your issues with selling commercial time and stuff like that. So it's a great point, Terry. I don't think it'll ever happen. It probably won't. But, you know, I think you'd get better players in the game and not just kind of like a, you know, popularity contest, if you will.
I think so. That's a really good question, Terry. So to your point, I think it's a really good question. I'm just going to use this as an example because we're talking about this player specifically. The outfield for the American League is being led by Aaron Judge. No question there. No surprise. Juan Soto, number two. Again, no question. No surprise. Kyle Tucker. That's fair. He's having a great year so far. Stephen Kwan, leading the league in hitting. Absolutely incredible. Number five is Anthony Santander. That is a mic drop moment. Number six is Alex Verdugo. That's another mic drop. What are we doing? We go all the way down to Adolis Garcia, who's number 8. I don't understand how. And then Mike Trout, who's not even playing this year, is number 9 in AL voting. If that doesn't tell you that the system is broken and needs to be resolved, I really don't know what you need to see. Because Mike Trout shouldn't be on there. It's terrible. I really think that if you don't have Jaren Duran starting, or at the very least your first guy off the bench as your fourth outfielder, I think you need to do some soul searching here, because Judge, Soto, Tucker, all fair game for being 3 starters. They're having incredible seasons, but it looks so silly to have that happen where you don't even have him in the top 9. It's a broken system and it needs to be resolved. So I'll leave it on that. Anything else that either one of you two wanted to add? Fair. All right, Jim, hit us with your stud.
So I am going to choose Zach Kelly as my stud. Kelly was in, obviously started today's game as an opener. He was in yesterday's game as well. Only pitched 1/3 of an inning, but he got the out. He had six pitches, 4 for strikes. And then obviously he started today. And he looked really, really good. He wound up going 2 2/3, 1 hit, 3 strikeouts, 21 strikes in 33 pitches, and he was able to strike out De La Cruz in that as well. He's been a great bullpen guy. I don't know how much he's been kind of like just, you know, forgotten about. I don't want to say forgotten about, but just not like the number one guy for Cora. But he's been getting the job done. He's had 2 wins last week. But, you know, his stats, if you look at him, have been very good in June. He hasn't allowed a hit in June, and that covers 6, 7, 8 appearances. So, I mean, he's been really reliable, and he's my stud, because he's just been kind of like an outlier, and he's been getting the job done, period.
Terry, anything you want to add?
I'm going to start mine with a hot take. Zach Kelly will be a better relief pitcher during his time in Boston than Joe Kelly. That's going to strike some nerves, because who doesn't love Joe Kelly? I love the guy.
You're going to hurt some feelings, Terry. But, so I'm going to ask you politely to tread very carefully.
I mean,
with this hot
Joe Kelly was a mess half the time he was here. And then I remember in September 2018, the dude was all over the place, and so was Barnes. Our bullpen was trash that month, and I'm like, one of these guys won't even make the roster, and I think they both did, and they were both fine, but Joe Kelly just flipped the switch. Zach Kelly just, so far, he's very consistent. He's got, I can't really compare him to Tanner Houck, I guess. Like, Houck is just cool and collected on the mound, but in a way, so is Kelly. I mean, last week I talked about that bases loaded situation. He came into the game. I can't remember if that was against the Yankees. And he strands all of them. He gets 3 outs. And that's the type of guy you need, you know, in the late innings. And I said last week as well, I think he's the closer of the future. I really believe that. Watch Garrett Whitlock out there. The dude looks like he's having an anxiety attack, you know, as soon as he gives up a hit. And Kelly is just unfazed by anybody being on base. And it's early, and I'm throwing out these big expectations, but I'm more convinced every time out.
It's I always love Joe Kelly. I think what Joe Kelly did, that started the whole Joe Kelly Fight Club thing, put him in his own class. Like, the Joe Kelly Fight Club, I'm all for it. I love it. I would buy a shirt in a second. I love being able to see him now playing in LA. When he's out, it's the game is electric. I'm going to make one small tweak. As a reliever, Zach Kelly has not allowed a hit. He did allow just one hit in 11 two-thirds innings. That was just today as the opener. So, Jim, to your point, no hits allowed for nine innings prior to today. Struck out 13, only allowed one run on no hits. So, yeah, electric. I will not say that Zach Kelly will have a better career as a reliever over Joe Kelly yet, because I still need to see if he can do what he did again. Joe Kelly had a really nice 2017 before things kind of fell off a little bit. I think that's something else to remember because, you know, you think about Ryan Brazier last year going into this year too. Ryan Brazier was one of the best relievers in baseball after the Dodgers added a cutter. Look at Brazier's numbers this year. He looks like a totally different dude. He had one home run all last year, I believe, with the Dodgers, giving up three so far in a short sample size. If Zach Kelly can keep it together and not blow it up, sure, he has the opportunity to be a great reliever. I hope to God they don't make him a long reliever. I don't want to tinker with that. You know, the Red Sox, where they love to tinker. But it's definitely something I would put that as a season-long hot take to see if we go back 6/23/24, is this still valid? Pin the comment if you want. Happy to revisit this one. I will not give this guy credit yet. I love what he's done so far, but I can't say he's going to have a better year than or better career as a reliever than Joe Kelly. I can't do it yet.
Joe Kelly was just, I don't know if he was a bit of a head case, but he just had, he was very similar to Matt Barnes. Barnes would mesmerize you and then fall off a cliff for a whole month. You know, once Kelly starts showing that, I mean, I don't know if we're going to win a ring anytime in the next 10 years, but, you know, so Joe Kelly will always have that. But man, there was never a full season where I'm like, Joe Kelly's the guy. He's going to go out there and he's going to shut him down all season. Those words never came out of my mouth.
Okay, I'm going to say one thing because you have a thing with the Kellys right now, Terrence. Joe Kelly and Zach Kelly here. If Zach Kelly plunks, I think it was Tyler Austin before he got shipped off to the Twins. That's who he hit up and in, if I'm not mistaken. Or
it was Tyler Austin. You're correct.
It was Tyler Austin, right? Yeah. And then he went to Minnesota, and he was an absolute bum. That was his only moment of fame. The guy was garbage, hot trash, okay? Joe Kelly hits him, he's sending him into the ground. Zach Kelly hits him, who's winning that fight?
I've seen Kelly go psycho. I've seen him go psycho on the way back to the dugout. I don't know.
Please send me that video. There is nobody, I think there are a few pitchers in Major League Baseball that have the kind of fire that Joe Kelly has. Joe Kelly's 20, I think he's 35, 36 years old. Zach Kelly is
29, 30-ish.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah. 29 years old, 7 years younger. 7 years ago, Joe Kelly was the same age as Zach Kelly when that whole incident happened. So are we going to see Zach Kelly say something like that? Plunk some nobody and then like egg somebody on like, yeah, come on, throw the glove down and let's go. Are we going to see that kind of fire from Zach Kelly for the Boston Red Sox? Is he going to be the new Zach Kelly Fight Club? Is it going to be the Kelly Fight Club 2.0? Are you telling me that?
So let me say this. Will Zach Kelly ever have a moment as iconic as the benches clearing brawl with the Kelly Tyler Austin thing? No, probably not.
Thank you.
The stats are going to be way better for Zach Kelly.
Asterisk so far.
And my level of trust, I don't know. I'm drinking the punch. I admit it. It's early, but
you're drinking the punch? Is that a fish?
I've literally lost 30 pounds since April, but yeah, I'll have some punch.
Okay, perfect. I'm loving this. This is great. Anything else that you just want to add to Zach Kelly? Perfect. All right. So my stud for this one, we're gonna round this out, is Connor Wong. Connor Wong has also been, as Jim had mentioned, one of the more consistent guys this year. Goes 4-for-13 in the series, had a solo shot in the first game, going 2-for-4, finished up the Rest of the series had a 1-for-4 game, knocked in another run. 1-for-5 game three's only hit was another home run. So two homers, four RBIs in the series. I mean, Connor Wong was one of the names, Terry, that I think, I'm not going to say you said it, but may have been dangled because we were talking about Kyle Teal as potentially the future catcher, and maybe it's not going to be Connor Wong. Connor Wong is the best hitting catcher in baseball, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's got the highest batting average. He's not playing every single day. Kind of wish he was because he's absolutely torching it this month so far. Prior to today's game, was 17-for-49, a .347 batting average. He's now 18-for-54, which is good for .333, still better than his current batting average, with two homers, 10 RBIs. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it that outside of, you know, Will Smith in L.A., Salvador Perez in Kansas City, I think that Connor Wong is probably a top four catcher, top three catcher in the American League. If I have Connor Wong or one of those two other guys that I just mentioned, I'm not upset. Could he call a better game? Yeah, sure, maybe at times. But which catcher hasn't had a game where it just gets away from them? When he's playing in a game so far in the month of June, we're winning a lot more games than we're losing. And let me ask you another question. Who would you rather have catching for you? Would you rather have Connor Wong or would you rather have Christian Vasquez? Because that's a name that some people were kind of tinkering with and talking about over the last couple weeks. Just chirping. I don't think it was anything serious. But between those two, if you had a choice, Terry, and then we'll go to you, Jim, right after that. Terry, if you had a choice, Christian Vaz or Connor Wong behind the dish, who would you rather have?
You're talking about the 2024 versions of them?
No. I'm talking about,
all time?
It's Connor Wong all day right now if we're talking about 2024. Christian Vasquez, I think, right now is done. But if you had to have, like, Christian Vasquez, like, in his moment when he was doing pretty well in that kind of two-year, three-year window, would you rather have him or the upside of Connor Wong?
That's a tough question because Wong has had a similar path to prominence that Vasquez had. Vasquez wasn't really stellar offensively until his third or fourth season. And that's exactly what's going on with Connor Wong. So gun to my head at this very moment, I'd probably pick Vasquez because maybe he's wouldn't have quite the offensive season that Wong's having, but he might be the best defensive catcher I've ever seen in my lifetime in Boston. Outside of Tech, but Tech never had the arm. Vasquez could gun people down, and so can Wong, but Wong just occasionally he'll have that pass ball, and it hurt us in April a couple of times. So, but that's just how I feel right now. Like 2 years from now, maybe Connor Wong blows away Christian Vasquez. I don't know. We don't know what the ceiling is, but he's hit a ton of home runs this year. He's been super clutch. And I bring this up a lot. In 2019, the year before we acquired him, he led all of minor league baseball in home runs. So the potential was there. He's living up to it now. But gun to my head, on this day in this year, I would probably still take Vasquez.
Jim?
Look, there's a lot to like about what Connor Wong has done this season, right? And I'm going to probably go against the grain just a little bit. Adley Rutschman's definitely in my conversation for best, catcher in the American League, if not in baseball. I worry about Connor Wong's long-term longevity at the position of catcher. He's a small guy. He's 6'1", 190 pounds, soaking wet. Typically, most of your catchers are bigger dudes. Veritek, Vasquez, Rutschman, 6'3", 230, whatever. I would not be surprised, and I'm not saying I have any insider information, but I think it would not be a bad idea to maybe even consider him to be a future second baseman. You got Kyle Teal coming up. Reese McGuire is not a long-term solution here, I don't think. But if you want Connor Wong's bat in the lineup a little more frequently, you have a black hole at second base. I mean, this team continuously drafts and trades for middle infielders, and they don't have a second baseman or shortstop that they can put out there on a nightly basis. It's beyond me. He's had a couple games at second base. He's been fine. But you know what? Look, Houston did it with Craig Biggio. So why can't the Red Sox do that with Connor Wong? It would also save his legs. He wouldn't have to worry about managing a pitching staff like most catchers have to do. It would allow him to just go out there, be a great defensive second baseman, and concentrate on his hitting. The guy can still run. He's still relatively young. He's more of a number two or a number seven at bat, six at bat. You know, he's not a guy that you're going to just poke at the nine hole or eight hole because you just got to put him in there. So, you know, I think you get more longevity out of him if you turn him into a second baseman. Just a thought.
So Craig Biggio, for a second, I remember I actually have his rookie card, and I thought he's probably one of my favorite second basemen and favorite baseball players of all time. I think it's kind of funny that now his son plays in L.A. and, you know, he's not even close. He's never going to be his dad. His dad is always going to be the better Biggio between the two of them. But he started off as a catcher. Then they started tinkering with him and making him an outfielder. Then they're making him a second baseman. It was almost like they were trying to make it fail. And he just always was there and answered the call of duty. Like, that was the type of guy that he is. Connor Wong is the same age that Christian Vasquez was when he had his best statistical year. 138 games played, 23 homers, 72 RBIs, a .276 batting average. The year before COVID, I don't remember what year it was when they nerfed the baseballs. Was that 2019 or was that 2018?
Well, it started in 2015, and then the peak of it was 2019.
So he ended up having that crazy offensive year when they started making baseballs easy as heck did. It was the Alonso year that he like broke. It was, yeah, 2019. So outside of that, how many years has Christian Vasquez hit 10 home runs or more? Take a guess.
Two.
Jim?
I'll say two.
Two. Try nil. Zero.
Wow.
The guy has never been a power hitter. He's only once hit above .283, and that was in 2017 in a 99-game sample size. I think that Connor Wong, Terry, hope you're sitting down. This is my hot take for this day. I think that Connor Wong will have a much better career as a catcher for the Boston Red Sox than Christian Vasquez ever did. And I appreciate Vaz for everything that he was able to do. I just think that Connor Wong is going to be able to do more. And Jim brought up a really good point. You want to keep that bat in. I find it a little bit disrespectful that you kind of forgot about Trevor Story, because he'll be back next year for six games. I'm just kidding, Trevor. We hope you do come back and play a full season, because, damn, man, we really do miss you. And we hope that you can have a healthy year for us. But Connor Wong could play second base. He's done it this year. He's done it last year. He's done it the year before that. He's done it for three straight years. Is he doing it regularly? No. But does he offer you the opportunity to spell your current second baseman that, to Jim's point, has been a little bit of a black hole? Yes, it does. And with the emergence of Kyle Teal, having Connor Wong and Kyle Teal, if the goal is to potentially build and go for it in a couple of years, I don't really hate the idea of Connor Wong and Kyle Teal being your two options. You want to have something like that, you could potentially have a two-headed monster like that with one that's got power and one that's got pretty good power with the ability to impress and hit over .330. Is it going to continue? I don't know, but I'm going to ride the high for as long as I possibly can. That's why I'm still thinking hot take. Connor will have a better year. Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
So for some reason, I thought Vasquez, was a bit more of a power hitter. I know he hit at least one or two home runs in that 2021 postseason. One of them, it was either the go-ahead run or it was even a walk-off home run. I don't remember. But just a few stats, though. From 2019 through, 2022. Oh, I'm getting messed up because of the trades. So four years in a row, three out of those four, he hit .274 or better. 2020 as well. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be diving too deep into that. But the one thing I did love about Christian Vasquez was he wasn't a high strikeout guy either. You know, that's one of the things I loved about Alex Verdugo, just always putting together a quality at bat. And the defense, again, like I said, I mean, who is better in the last 20, 25 years? So, and I wasn't a Vasquez guy, you know, throughout his tenure. You know, eventually he did kind of win me over a little bit. No moms allowed. No, she can't hear me.
Yeah, mom couldn't hear you, but she came and I haven't seen her like all day.
Charlie's mom just snuck into the background. But yeah, so
visiting fam. So full transparency, visiting family.
Yes.
So having a good week
in actual Providence instead of woke Los Angeles. But anyway, let me just take Jim's temperature on one thing. Is Kyle Teal untouchable? He's the best player in all the minors right now, essentially. But with Connor Wong's breakout here, and you've got a million lefties in the pipeline, is Teal untouchable, or is he your catcher of the future?
So, you know, we're hearing about the big three for about two seasons, right? Obviously, Mayer, Anthony, and Teal. Teal, obviously, for two seasons since they drafted him. To me, he's the only guy that is untouchable.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is because you can find, draft, and develop a shortstop. You can move a second baseman to short. You could even move a third baseman to short. Outfielders, anybody can play outfield. I'm sorry. If Hanley Ramirez can play the outfield, anybody can play the outfield. Manny can play the outfield. Anybody can play the outfield. When you got a catcher, that's a really dynamic position on the baseball field. And I think if you're going to have a guy that's going to potentially be, you know, a top hitter, like maybe he could be like what Rushman's doing, those are hard to find. You know, you can get and replace just about any other position on that diamond. Catcher's hard. I would have to be blown away to move him. And I'm talking probably you got to be Pedro in Montreal, Beckett in Florida. That's the kind of guy I would have to be able to get in a trade to even consider moving him. I would move the others.
I would struggle with anybody being able to say that Kyle Teal is touchable. And the only trade that comes to my mind, because sure enough, you can say maybe we'll get lucky and it'll be like Derek Lowe and Jason Veritek for Heathcliff Slocum with the Seattle Mariners. But in the off chance, it ends up becoming, and this could, you know, some people could be saying you're insane for comparing it, Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson. You mourn, how could you make that move? This is going to be the forever argument. Can you keep all of your toys in your box, in your chest? The answer is no. Are all of your prospects going to hit? No. How often does a catcher come up in your pipeline with this kind of upside? The guy is 22 years old. So far this year, 307, 8 homers, 45 RBIs. 5 stolen bases. Do I expect him to be stealing bases in the majors? Probably not. I don't want my catcher stealing bases. I want him to be as healthy as he possibly can be. The forever argument is always going to be you need to trade elite prospects if you want to get elite level talent. So right now you're talking about the Pedro Martinez of Montreal. You're talking about the Josh Beckett of Florida. What pitcher are you asking for to ship Kyle Teal away? Because my answer is nobody right now. But hypothetically speaking, you're asking for that kind of return. Who are you asking for?
So, I mean, I would look at – I would want somebody already in the majors with at least
– You have to be in the majors.
Yeah, with at least 4 years.
Proven talent.
Yeah. I mean, if you could get – this falls short of Pedro, but if you could get a George Kirby type guy with the framework of an extension in place at the time of the trade, he's certainly a guy I would want, and I would probably want a couple top 10 hitting prospects in their system. I'd say a top five and a top 10. That's what it would take to get me done. And I don't have strong feelings on this, so I'm not going to die on this hill, but I'm looking at what Connor Wong does right now, okay? And I'm wondering, how much better is Kyle Teal really going to be beyond what we're already getting? So if Connor Wong's going to be a borderline stud anyway and you can get this massive haul back, I would do it. Now, having said that, if we want to commit to Kyle Teal, I think you got to sell high on Wong probably before the end of next winter. I'd cash in on one of them.
Okay, so let's float this out then. You sell Connor Wong because we're going to go high on Teal. What's your asking price?
For Wong, you're going
to get Kirby?
I don't think you could get a Kirby-type guy. It would probably be a prospect-laden package for Wong.
Are you asking for anybody with MLB current ready talent?
It depends. I mean, the package isn't going to be quite as high. You're not going to get the same haul. So
I think you got to have Logan Webb in that discussion. You got to have Crochet from the White Sox in that discussion.
That would be more realistic, I feel like. A guy like Crochet.
Crochet. You're not getting Crochet, though. I think Crochet. So I already said this months ago. I'm already picking Garrett Crochet to be my 2025 Cy Young winner for the American League. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, why do you think there was no way you can get him, though?
Have you seen his year? Have you seen what he's doing? Garrett Crochet is the American League version of Corbin Burns. He is lighting up the Christmas tree in more ways than one. And I got flack from one of my former co-hosts who was a complete idiot and thought I was on drugs for thinking that Corbin Burns was going to be good. He ended up winning a Cy Young that year.
Andrew Dwan.
So,
I mean, the Red Sox were able to
I don't remember his name.
The Red Sox were able to get Chris Sale with 3 years of control left. Crochet has 3 years of control left. I mean, granted, they gave up what was considered to be one of the number one minor league guys, you know, along with Kopech. But, I mean, I think anything is possible depending on, you know, what the package is.
Well, hang on, though. Let's pump the brakes on Crochet because Connor Wong doesn't fit their rebuild, unfortunately. So if you're going after Crochet, unfortunately, it has to be a prospect-laden package. That's what the White Sox are going to want.
Yeah, Chris Sale, when he was there, he was already 27 years old. He'd gotten 17 wins multiple times in Chicago. Yeah, Terry, I'm going to echo that. I'm going to echo your comment. It's going to have to be a prize package trade if it ends up going down.
Yeah, and with Connor Wong, I mean, maybe a one-for-one trade might work. You might get a team's second-best outfielder for their catcher, for our catcher. So you either got to go that route or you just got to focus on just getting the best prospect package for a guy like Wong. And I think in some systems, you might get their best pitching prospect or no worse than their number two with their first or second best hitter. And that's fine for me. I want to get some right-handed balance in this lineup. And it's hard to do when you're trading one of your better right-handed at-bats. But just look at it. I mean, you could have an outfield next year an infield with Devers, Meyer, Hamilton, and Casas, all lefties. And then go to your outfield. It could be Duran, Anthony, and Abreu, all lefties. Like, you have to find some balance here.
Yeah, that's not balance.
You're going to get Kevin Cash bringing out an opener just to screw up his lineup.
So, just not looking, who leads the major leagues in strikeouts per nine?
Strikeouts per nine.
It's Garrett Crochet.
Okay. That's where I was going to go because he's the man of the hour.
He's the man of the hour. I love Garrett Crochet. I love me some Garrett Crochet. I was talking about this with one of my buddies who's in our fantasy league, Terry. He drafted Crochet in the 25th round. He was a huge, huge supporter of him a couple years ago. Kept him all last year. Just rode the bench because he knew he was going to come back. I don't know where the heck he heard about him. I had no idea who this guy was. Mike, shouting you out. Dylan Cease, also former Chicago White Sox, has the fifth best K9 in the majors, and he's doing it in San Diego. Garrett Crochet was rumored to be a player to be shipped to San Diego. I don't know what package they were going to be getting for that, but it would take an act of God for Chicago to ship him out, I think. I really, really do. I think that he is the future. If they're going to try to build around a pitcher in Chicago or build around a player, Garrett Crochet is everything that Michael Kopech could not do and could not be.
Well, here's the bad news, Charlie. You can get Crochet, but that's going to be the Kyle Teal deal that we were trying, that you guys were trying to avoid. So Kyle Teal, Willy Abreu, and a pitching prospect. I don't know if that's Perales. He's having Tommy John this week, I think. But that,
I don't think they'd want him for that reason.
That's your, well, it, like I said, they're not going to be relevant for at least 4 or 5 years. So I don't think that's going to matter. Quite frankly, I would want a guy who's had Tommy John within the last couple of years, if I've seen that he's bounced back, because, you know, he shouldn't need it anytime soon. But anyway, if you want Crochet, Teal was your guy in that deal. But like I said, I'll commit to either one of them, but I want to cash in on the one we're not committing to, is what I'm getting at.
No. I absolutely hear that. So that was actually kind of a fun little exercise, fun little back and forth. One of our honorable mentions for this week, I have to shout out Kenley Jensen. Kenley Jensen has now had 6 straight appearances with a save, going back to, let's see, oh my gosh, the 16th of May, he has allowed only 1 earned run. And my favorite stat to talk about when it comes to Kenley Jensen, I already know that Terry knows the answer to this, which is really frustrating. Guess how many home runs Kenley Jensen's allowed this year?
0.
0 home runs. And what I love is that Kenley Jensen is now pitching back-to-back games again. He's done it 2 times in a row, 17th and the 18th of June, now the 22nd and the 23rd. Yes, there's a couple days off in between, but I really like that they're giving him back-to-back performances or opportunities to shut the door, because in the past, this had been his bugaboo, as Terry would say, like his one faux pas or issue. He just could not come and get the job done in back-to-back games. So I have to give it to him. And now, if I'm not mistaken, is he 2 saves ahead of Craig Kimbrell on the all-time list? I have to look, because I can't remember. At one point, he was behind Kimbrell, and now I think the roles have switched. And Kimbrell's playing for Baltimore. So someone will have to fact check me on that. But Kenley Jensen is going to be knocking on the door, and Kimbrell as well. It'd be really, really cool to see Kenley Jensen make history as a member of the Boston Red Sox. Because if the Red Sox, for whatever reason, and we all think it could potentially happen, if they don't become buyers, this is going to be one of the guys that gets sold. Terry, anything you want to add about Kenley real quick?
I'm excited to see what we get for him, but nothing else.
yeah, exactly. Jim, anything you want to add?
I think it's a bad look for the Red Sox to even be entertaining talking about moving Jansen before the trade deadline.
You know, I agree.
You want fans to be engaged. You want them to believe in a team. How can a fan believe in a team when the organization doesn't believe in the team? You know, I've had this argument on Twitter with a few people that said, well, you get Liam Hendricks going to close. How do you know Liam Hendricks is going to be effective right after his surgery coming back in next month or in August? You don't know if he's going to be effective. And if he's not, you're really in some tough doo-doo there. So I wouldn't do that. If it's all about Hendricks, put him in the 7th inning, you know, have Martin in the 8th and Kenley in the 9th. I mean, if you're trying to compete, you're trying to win ball games. You got to shorten that game. You've got starters that are pretty much going 5-6 innings. I just think it's a bad look.
You know, honestly, I am nervous about the Liam Hendricks bit, because this is at Alberto Mondesi all over again. Alberto Mondesi was supposed to come back, and then something happened. There was a setback. Then he was ready. Then his knees were hurting. And then he completely fell apart. And I know what Hendricks is going through. We all know what he's going through. We hope that he makes a healthy recovery. But the expectations that are going to be set forth for Hendricks, borderline unfair. I really hate that. It's terrible. It's Mondesi 2.0, and that's the thing. When we're gonna talk about Hendricks, it's just there's a chance it never actually happens, which really, really sucks. Any other honorable mentions, Terry, that you want to talk about for studs?
Well, I can just fly through them real quick. So Tyler O'Neill, 3-for-9, still had a bunch of strikeouts, but not terrible. Raffy Devers was only 2-for-11, but he did drive in what ended up being the winning run in game two. It was a sac fly. Jaron Duran came in from third base on that. And then Rob Refsnyder had a pretty good series. Game two, top of the eighth, he had a RBI single to right field. That's what tied the game before Devers drove in the aforementioned winning run. And then today, top of the sixth in the finale, two-run homer off of Frankie Montas kind of put the game out of reach at that point. So Refsnyder had a good one. The bullpen in general in games two and three never walked anyone, so that was nice. Chris Martin had a couple good outings, and his ERA quietly back down to 3.70, so another potential trade chip that could be moved. Cam Boozer, two scoreless outings. Weiser, two scoreless outings. Pretty good series for our bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, your bullpen walked two guys and were asked to come up clutch in the third game because of what was going on and what we were doing. And Keller, good Lord, you know, game three, God rest your soul, almost tossed the game away to Cincinnati. And we're going to talk about him, I'm sure, in the dishonorable section. But I wanted to take a moment to say, I think I'm going to be eating crow on Rob Refsnyder because he's been having a really proper 2024. And myself, raise my hand, I did not think that this was going to be someone that was going to have a future in Boston. He is absolutely proving me wrong, and I just want to give him his due credit because I was wrong. That's it. Anybody else you want to add, T?
I think that about covers them.
Perfect. Let's slide over into our dishonorables, so our duds here. Who is your dud, T, for this series?
I am going to go with Emmanuel Valdez. He had a pretty good couple series since being called up coming into this, but only 1-for-7, three strikeouts in the two games he did play. You know, as we get to the deadline, if we do decide to be buyers, there's a lot of interesting options out there for middle infielders. You could target a shortstop if you want, and then Hamilton can go to second, or you could target a second baseman and keep Hamilton right where he is. But, you know, he had an error, I think, was that in game one or two, I forget. And he's never really been known for his defensive prowess. Has a great swing. I mean, he can run into one and absolutely destroy it, but not a guy I think that's going to have a long career in Major League Baseball, and certainly playing a position I hope we address here in the next 5 weeks.
Jim?
You know, look, as far as Valdez is concerned, and I don't want to take away from Abreu, but you have to figure when you get the opportunity to acquire two players from the Houston Astros that Houston knows their minor league talent. They know who's good, who's not going to be good, who's going to be a player, who's not. I mean, obviously it wasn't much because we gave up Christian Vasquez, but Valdez is just kind of like a stopgap to me. I don't think he's got a future here. You know, he's been fun to watch on occasion with some of the home runs that he has been hitting. And one of the things that I find funny about the entire situation is He's been lights better than Grissom, for crying out loud, which is not really saying much. But, you know, again, another left-handed bat, you know, and that's, you know, we're so left-handed as it is. He's going to be that stopgap maybe for this season and, you know, maybe next season, but that's about it. He's very streaky guy, and I really don't see much happening there with him. I think he's going to – I think he is what he is, and I think you're going to see much develop.
So when we talk about Valdez, we kind of were hoping to see a little bit of some uptick in something. Home runs, maybe your batting average gets a little bit of a tick up. But I'm not seeing anything that tells me he's growing as a player. I don't see anything. I don't look at Valdez right now and say, yeah, this is someone that I can trust and say is going to be a proper piece of our future. The other half of that deal, Willier Abreu, we've seen an uptick in homers. We've seen an uptick in RBIs. Yeah, the batting average came down, but he's also drawing more walks. He's stealing more bases. People are going to say, yeah, he's playing more games. I feel that Abreu has had more of an impact than Valdez has. I think there's a chance that Valdez could go back to hitting under 200. Last year was hitting 266. When are we going to see Emmanuel Valdez take a step up and be that player that we're hoping he can be? He's 25 years old. So we're a couple of years away, unless we're already there, at seeing peak Valdez. I'm not seeing him move the needle, sadly. And, you know, if there's a team that comes calling, yeah, maybe this is someone else that I would throw in into a move or into a trade. I don't think he's going to be the core piece. I don't think anyone would think Valdez is going to be the core piece, but he might be a chip in piece to a deal. I just don't see him making enough of an impact, which is really disappointing. Anything else that you guys want to add about Valdez? All right. Jim, who was your dud?
So I'm going to go with my least favorite player on the Red Sox, which is Masataka Yoshida. Last April, I took a lot of heat on Twitter because I said, I don't think this guy can play. And I think we're starting to see the rewards of my thoughts play out this year. The Boston Red Sox have told you that he is not a guy that can play the outfield. So, you know, they made him a DH. The problem is that there is no other place on the field or in the lineup that they can hide this guy. 0-8 this in the series with a strikeout. He is now batting 100. What is he batting? 118 since he's been back from his injury. And you know, you can't keep a DH that's going to have four hits in June on your staff. He can't be a DH. He offers nothing to this team. He's a left-handed batter to add to all the other left-handed batters we have, and he's just not producing. Too many groundouts to second base. He has no clutch performance at all. He's just been a complete waste. I mean, if I tweeted this before, I think they should DFA him. He's not going to get claimed. They can stuff him in Worcester, and it'll be Rusney Castillo 2.0. It was a bad move. It was a big contract. They're not going to be able to move him. You're not going to be able to take him and package him up with some prospect and try to get rid of him. It's just a bad decision, and I don't see it getting any better with Yoshida.
Terry.
Yeah, I mean, I've also given the Rusney comparison in past episodes as well, and that's exactly who he is. That's exactly what Heim Bloom did with about $90 million. I think we gave 70 or so million to Rusney Castillo, and he ended up playing his whole career basically with the Wu Sox. And I thought it was a massive risk to take. You know, I was at pains to point out that entire winter you look at the bats that have come over from that Asian market, you know, Ohtani's a unicorn and he's in a category of his own. So I'm not gonna put him in there. But you had Shinsu Chu and Hideki Matsui. Who else am I missing in the last 15 years? So it's like, it's not a chance worth taking. I'll sign their pitching. I think you can get a lot of really good pitchers from those markets, and the Red Sox have a pretty good history of it. I mean, you had Koji. He was already in the States, but still. Junichi Tozawa was really good out of our bullpen for a number of years. Daisuke was who he was, but, you know, you can't say that that entire contract was a bust. Yoshida is just a massive net negative. And Boston, this has to be the loneliest place in the world for him because he sucks. He's not relevant, and he's got to be keenly aware of those two things. And nobody else really speaks his language in this organization outside of his interpreters. I mean, it's got to be a lonely place for him.
So, I mean, Ichiro Suzuki within the last 15 years is still playing Major League Baseball. But I didn't want to steal your thunder because, you know, even 10 years ago, Ichiro Suzuki still wasn't, you know, Ichiro of old. He became a Yankee, and that was really hard for me to cheer for him. And then he became a Miami Marlin, and he's past 40. And then he goes to finish off his career in Seattle, which is hilarious because he's now been in the league for 20 years after a insane career in Japan, where he was hitting almost 400 the year that he became a Seattle Mariner, and then set the single hit record year three or year four with like 262 hits. He came from the same team as Ichiro, and I think this is just their hope that maybe, just maybe, they were going to be able to get lucky with him. But there was no player like Ichiro Suzuki. And Masataka Yoshida is not going to be the guy that we thought he was going to be. I think it's safe to say, yeah, this was a bad contract. It's unfortunate. It's another left-handed bat in a sea of left-handed bats for the Boston Red Sox. We unfortunately are going to get bit. There is no team that is going to take this contract on. The only way that they would take Yoshida is if it's enticed with a prospect. And it would have to be a good one. Otherwise, no team is going to say it's worth it because you're saying that that prospect is worth $16 million. And truth be told, it's not going to happen. So the Boston Red Sox finally got out of the David Price thing. We finally got away from that one. Now we've got, you know, Trevor Story on the books. He's not playing. Yoshida, basically not playing. Jim brought up a really good point. You can't hide this guy. He's 4-for-34. He's not stealing bases. He has one extra base hit since April 27th, and he has two runs scored since that crazy game when basically all of the Boston Red Sox went off in Chicago. We won 17-0. He had four hits in that game. Since then, he's had five hits. It's been a month. What are we doing? Like, I get it. Injuries are a part of the game, but seriously, like, what were we really thinking when we signed him? It was a pipe dream to think that he was going to be that guy. Terry, giving you credit here. Like you said, if we can move Yoshida, we should have tried to do it. His best bit of baseball was at the beginning of last year, and that was it. After that, it started falling off quickly, and it wasn't even close. He has not come back and been remotely close to relevant in what he was last year. He's had only a couple games this year where he's had even a little bit of an impact. The extra base hits, six. He has 26 hits on the year. He's hitting .228 on the year. His on base is .300. You can find that on the free agent market. You don't need to pay $60 million for that. So, I mean, it's going to be difficult for the Red Sox to try to find an excuse to put him into the lineup when there are other guys that should be getting more meaningful at bats. Totally fair game, Jim. I mean, he's not the answer. It's, you know, 0-for-4 in game 2, didn't play game 3, had as much of an impact. Terry.
So over the next three seasons, 25, 26, and 27, he's owed roughly $56 million. And here's my question. Is he even in this organization by July of next season?
I don't even think he finishes the season. I think you're going to get a phantom injury again, or this thumb condition is going to resurface. Because, I mean, it'd be one thing if he was a Gold Glove defender, outfield, infield, if he was, you know, something like that. At least you could say, well, we have him here for his defense. He can't play the outfield. The Red Sox, like I said earlier tonight, I says the Red Sox told you that by removing him from the outfield and making him your full-time DH. A DH needs to hit. If you were going to have a guy be a pretty much a DH 5 out of 7 games a week, he's got to be able to hit. In June, he's batting 118, you know, with 4 hits, 1 double, 1 RBI, and 5 strikeouts. And that's 9 games. So, I mean, he's offering you nothing. He's not walking. His on-base percentage is 189. So he's not even walking. He's doing nothing. He's a liability. He's going to – at this point, you hope he strikes out, because the fact is, if he grounds out the second, it's a potential double play. And he's responsible for 2 outs instead of 1. So I don't see him making the rest of the season.
Well, I don't think he'll be released by the end of the season, though.
No.
So that was my question. By next July, will he be just straight up released?
No.
He'll be he might be DFA'd, but then he's gonna make it through waivers, and they're gonna keep him at Worcester, and they're gonna have to pay him to play there.
He it's up to him though whether he accepts that assignment or not. Like, he can opt for free agency, which I think he would do just to get the hell out of Boston if he's getting paid anyway. So,
well, we know that the Boston Red Sox don't insure the contracts. I if I'm not mistaken, unless something changed. I remember reading an article, and I just ended up popping it up now. The Red Sox do not insure their contracts. Sam Kennedy, everybody's favorite, says that the cost benefit usually isn't there. It's incredibly expensive, and there are certain things that have to trigger the payment, the player, when they get hurt. So it typically doesn't make sense. Kennedy also said he believes taking out insurance policies is like gambling, because the coverage is based on statistical probability. Well, here's the thing. How were the Red Sox not gambling when they gave him a 5-year, $90 million deal? What was the total on it?
Was over
it 5 for 90?
With the signing, it was over $100 million. Signing
because money. He got 18.6 for 5 years. That's 93 million. And then what was the deal that the Japanese team got? It was another 10 million for I can't remember. But that's a gamble in itself. Every single time you sign a player to a crazy contract, it is a gamble. Every time you sign a player from Japan not named Ichiro Suzuki, you are, in theory, gambling. He's 29 years old. He's 3 years older than Ichiro Suzuki was when he signed his deal with the Seattle Mariners, as arguably the best player to ever play in Japan. I don't know. Like, I don't think he's going to get DFA'd. I think he's still going to be on the Red Sox this year. Phantom injury or not, LOL, Jim, you're right. There's going to be a chance that happens again. I still think he'll be on the Red Sox next year too. I think it'll be after 2025 when the Red Sox finally find God and decide to either make a decision or at that point just straight DFA'ing him.
Well, it just comes down to how valuable is that spot on the 26-man roster. And if you're trying to bring up some or all of your big three, I think it becomes very valuable.
So, Charlie, they wound up paying the Buffaloes $15.4 million for the posting fee. So the total investment was $105.4 million.
Ouch.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I'll give him some credit. I think there was a time there for about 2 weeks, last end of April, early May, you couldn't get the guy out. But that was it. that's all he gave you.
And that's it, though. That was at the beginning of the year. That was it. They couldn't figure him out, and then they did. And then it was like, you know, where's Waldo? He's right there every single time. You find it, it's – they were talking about how he was – I mean, I actually have to look at his numbers because he had some – he had a couple of months that were absolutely insane, to your point. And it was just – it was dumb. The numbers that we were seeing were absolutely stupid numbers. Month of May, 354 last year, three homers, 15 RBIs. April, 265, that's fine. The following month, June, 269. July, 314, was still averaging a couple home runs a month. So it was like one hot, one cold, one hot, one cold. But still, by the end of the year, didn't do the worst. Could he have done better? Yes. 15 homers, 72 RBIs, hit 289. I don't think Yoshida's hitting 10 home runs. I don't think Yoshida's going to get 45 RBIs this year. I don't think he's going to hit 250. So at this point, next year, does he hit 200? Does he even get five or six home runs? Can he even get you 40 RBIs? I think the answer is no, no, and no. At which point, yeah, you're going to have to make some very difficult decisions, none for which I want to be in the room for. It's just, yeah, it's tough. I mean, if it hits, great. You got a superstar player for $18.6 million a year. If it doesn't, that's another Trevor Story contract on the books, and you're not going to be able to do anything with it. It's dead money. It's literally dead money.
I could argue that we didn't land a mid to upper level starting pitcher this winter because of that contract, because that money was kind of blocking
us.
I think
that's absolutely fair. I think that's absolutely fair. So. And even more so with Trevor Story too. That's 41 and change. 18.6 and 22.5 this year, that's $41.1 million on your payroll. That's not playing for the Boston Red Sox this year. That's not playing. On top of the fact that you're paying $17 million to the Atlanta Braves to not have Chris Sale pitch for you. That's just those three guys. We haven't even talked about Liam Hendricks making $2 million and a couple other players that aren't playing. You've got $60, $70 million. People that are not playing baseball for the Boston Red Sox. Your payroll of players that are actually valid is probably under $100 million. It's incredible that we're doing as well as we are with the amount of money that we have properly invested in this team. We don't have unreal expectations as fans. Sorry, Jim, real quick. We don't have unreal expectations. It's not unreal expectations. We're looking at how much money is being spent on this team. It's incredible. Oh, yeah. Lucas Giolito, too. I forgot to mention him, Jim, if you were going to say Giolito. So you look at it. Trevor Story, Giolito, Masataka, Yoshida. That's, let's see, 36, 58, 59, 1. Hendricks, another $2 million. 60, that's $80 million, including I'm starting to get a little flustered. So I'm going to try to change the subject. If one of you two wants to say something.
Yeah, I had a tweet on this a couple weeks back. At that time, before I think before Devers was out for a couple games, it was around $74, $75 million. Don't forget, you've also – the Red Sox are paying Chris Sale. The Red Sox are paying Turner. The Red Sox are paying Hosmer, Jolies Rodriguez, Garrett Cooper, Pablo Reyes, Zach Short, even though it's $24,000, and Joe Jakes. They're still paying Manny Ramirez $2 million. They're still paying Dustin Pedroia $2 million. Trevor Story's hurt. They're paying him $22.5 million. You said Giolito. Whitlock's out for $3.5 million. Casas is out. Murphy's out. Grissom was hurt. Mata was hurt. So the numbers are astounding. So this is one of the things that I get criticized online for, but – you know, you're going to have John Henry say good players cost money. Well, you also have $75 to $100 million of players that are not playing your sport. So you got to make better business decisions. If you're going to be a multi-billionaire like John Henry is, you can't have this happen.
Who's your...
anything you want to add?
Nope.
All right. I'd love to stay on to more positive news, but we haven't hit my dud yet. So my dud for this series was Cutter Crawford. Cutter, you know, I'm really saying this for a couple of reasons, and it's the three long balls that he gave up. Six in the third, five hits, five runs. Only three of those were earned. A couple walks, seven strikeouts. Another rough outing for Cutter. He's now 3-7 on the season. This month has not been good for Cutter Crawford. He's just been having one dud after another. I'm struggling to be able to pick Cutter Crawford. I was the only one that didn't pick the Red Sox winning game one. You've seen his ERA jump from 2.24 to 3.59 in the last eight starts. Cutter has had, and I'm going to go over this, over his last eight games, three earned in six and a third, three earned in six innings, two earned in six innings, four runs allowed, four earned runs, six total runs, four earned in six innings. Then you got five earned in six innings, six and four and a third. His one good appearance against St. Louis, one earned run in five and two thirds, and then four earned in six innings. So we're almost getting that quality start on a regular basis. Six of his last eight have been exactly, you know, six innings, excuse me, five have been six, one at six and a third, the most recent one. He's been striking out a lot of guys in the last three. He had a season high nine in his last game. He was able to get that win. We hadn't seen a win from him since May 1st, almost a month and a half. And I don't know what Cutter needs to do. Obviously, the home run ball has been absolutely killing him. The month of April, he didn't give up a home run. He gave up his first home run on May 1st. And after that, didn't give up more than one home run all of May in a game. And then June 4th, same thing. His last three starts, two home runs, two home runs, three home runs. So the home run ball is starting to bite him. I'm not sure if players are jumping on him now on a certain pitch. I haven't done enough analysis on that. But, I mean, it's not looking great for Cutter Crawford. So for me, dud performance here. We got to see if he can turn it around because, you know, yeah, the ERA came down, but we're still struggling to be that person that we need him to be. So Cutter, my dud. Terry, why don't you go first? Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, Cutter has exceeded expectations on the season for the most part, but his velocity has dropped. I think he was averaging right around 90 or so in this last start. And you could say that, well, you know, Andrew Bailey isn't really a velocity guy anyway. That's not what he's trying to get these guys to do. But it just seems like teams have figured him out. And I just don't know what the second half is going to bring for him. I don't know how long of a shelf life he has. We don't really know who the real Cutter Crawford is, I guess, but the dude looks absolutely gassed right now. And when I, in the temperature check, you know, I don't know how we're going to get there with our pitching. I feel great about Hauk, despite the fact he's also going to blow past his all-time innings here, probably within the next couple of starts. But Pivetta probably figures it out at some point, and hopefully Bayo figures it out, but there hasn't been any sign of that. It's crazy that we're winning at the clip that we are with the starting pitching that we're getting, you know, so eventually, you know, I think it's going to catch up to us, but it's hard for me to really be an optimist with Crawford long term. That funky delivery, I think, has been what's helped him, you know, pitch so effectively. And once that gets figured out, I don't know that there's a counter move there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, my thoughts with Crawford, to Terry's point, you know, I just think it's possible that he could be getting a dead arm. You know, you're going to reach career highs in innings pitched, you know, and he did make a comment of this, I think, maybe last week or so, where he was kind of almost complaining about it. And, you know, moving forward, I don't know if, and again, not to bring up phantom injury again, but might be a possibility that something like that could happen, just to kind of like, you know, give him a little less innings pitched and maybe a little bit more of a break coming into the second half. I don't know. It's possible. I just don't, you know, we don't know if these guys can sustain this kind of workload. And that, you know, that's a big concern for me, especially if you're going to be making decisions moving forward at a deadline, whether acquire pitching or trade pitching. And I'm not a Cutter Crawford fan. I think he's an injury waiting to be happening with the way his delivery is a little unique, like Terry mentioned. But he's in that category of career innings, and I'm just worried that that's going to catch up with him.
So to Terry's point, you know, that dead arm, you know, you're both talking about a dead arm situation. Your starting rotation of Brian Baio, Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck, and Nick Pivetta. Brian Baio hit his career high in 2023, 157 innings. We are 80 innings away from that number. So, okay, we know that he can do it. Problem is, Brian Baio has not been good this year with an ERA almost at 5. I don't feel like he's really taken a step up in his game. He's 7-4 this year with an ERA of 4.83. It's 0.6 worse this year than it was last year. Last year went 12-11. Was striking out, still not one per inning, and he's still not doing it again this year. His whip has also gotten worse. So that makes me nervous. Cutter Crawford, the highest number of innings he's pitched is 129, also in 2023. ERA of 4.04 this year, 3.59. Whip's about the same. Strikeouts, a little bit better K9 than, you know, better than 9.0. Take it. Cutter Crawford, to Terry's point, 106 innings in 2023. Had a 5.01 ERA. This year he's at 96 2/3. 2.14 ERA. He has a shutout, his first career shutout. That's like the unicorn statistic. You just don't see anymore in Major League Baseball. Gone are the days of, you know, Roy Halladay, who is throwing a shutout or a complete game every other game for the Toronto Blue Jays or the Philadelphia Phillies. And then Nick Pivetta. Nick Pivetta's career high was with the Boston Red Sox back in 2022, 179 2/3. Nick Pivetta and maybe Tanner Houck are the only two guys that I think are going to be able to last the whole year. Because truth be told, if you lose Tanner Houck this year, your best pitcher in 2024, you are categorically effed. And I say that because here's the thing. People keep saying the Red Sox are doing great. Statistically, you're right. We are. We're 6 games above 500 right now. But here's the thing. We are one really, really big injury in our starting rotation away from having a very bad day. Whitlock is down. Baio has not been himself. And with Cutter Crawford not being consistent, or to some degrees full-on consistent, yeah, we're getting the strikeouts. Home run balls are getting – they're getting up there. Not great. So I'm hoping Pivetta can keep doing what he's doing and pitching, you know, in the right direction. His ERA is still over 4. The Boston Red Sox starting rotation was the best starting rotation in all of baseball to start the year, and it wasn't even close. Had that rotation not been where they were, the Boston Red Sox would not be 6 games above 500. We wouldn't even be at 500. We wouldn't even be talking about this right now. We would probably already have moved one of the names that we were talking about not moving earlier this evening. So I'm really hoping that Cutter Crawford could take a step up, because God forbid we lose one of those names that we just discussed, we're in big trouble. And I don't want to be in that spot where we're in big trouble. We've got a couple holes. We could, in theory, be a couple pieces away from being, I'll say a contender. Sure, are we going to win the World Series? I don't think so. I think there are teams that have got far superior talent, crazy firepower. The Boston Red Sox just aren't there. The close? I don't know if I could say that either, but I think reality hasn't really set in for the Boston Red Sox yet, because, yeah, oh, you haven't had major injuries. Well, you just lost Trevor Story. Trevor Story hasn't really been relevant in a couple of years and really hasn't been relevant as a member of the Boston Red Sox, so I'm not really going to count him. But if we do lose a Cutter or a Tanner, and then all of the pressure gets put onto Brian Baio and Nick Pivetta, is anybody going to raise their hand and say, oh yeah, they can carry the load? Cause I'm not, I can't. Anything else that you guys want to add to that?
I'll just wrap it up on this.
Sure.
All winter long, I questioned the sustainability of the staff, and Crawford is looking less and less sustainable. He had an extra day's rest going into that. I think it was the, it was the Philly series. And then, you know, pitched fairly well, didn't get the W, two runs over six innings. And so, but we're already seeing he looks pretty taxed. So,
yeah, I mean, outside of that, some dishonorable mentions. I kind of already touched up on one of them. I don't know how much longer we're going to be having Keller on this team for. I'm kind of over it. I want him gone. He almost single-handedly let the Cincinnati Reds, you know, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was him that just had the doors blown off. Keller just is not good, and he has not been good for a little while. I'm just confused why the Boston Red Sox keep giving opportunities to players that just, you know, they're not it. I mean, his very first appearance as a member of the Red Sox did not do great. And sure, he's doing fine as a reliever sometimes, but I don't want to see his name get called. I really don't. If you can't shut down Cincinnati, to me, that's a problem. People are going to say, oh yeah, but he did fine against Philly, struck out, you know, three guys in that game, did fine against some other opponents. I don't have any faith in Keller, and that's not a long-term solution. So Keller was one of the dishonorables for me, just absolutely got shelled and almost allowed Cincinnati back into this game. Any other names, T, that you wanted to mention?
Nick Pivetta wasn't super great. Gave up a couple home runs, only lasted four and a third, just wasn't efficient, and hopefully he figures it out. Because you're either, you know, you're either going to trade him, you want his value to be as high as possible, or if you're going, you know, towards October, he's got to be a big part of that. So either way, he has to figure it out. Other than that, I don't have anyone else.
Jim, anybody?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it for all of us here tonight. Everyone have a great night. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.